Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special silent cast of the Dr. Christopher Hall Show and Podcast Magazine Sports Category Director Neil Haley. And I'm excited first to welcome Nobel Prize nominated doctor, best-selling author, and ER physician, Dr. Christopher Hall. Dr. Hall, how are you? And I know you're excited about our guest today.
Wow. Hey, Neil. Yeah, you know, I'm doing great. I'm very excited about our guest because he is a very rare individual.
All right. So let's go ahead and introduce him, please.
Well, no problem. Well, you know, I'm very excited to introduce one of the rare individuals who had the opportunity to play professional baseball and also professional football. An individual who knows a lot about hard work, a motivational speaker, and wow, I'm just very excited to work to show Mr. Edward Martin Smith. Welcome to the show, Ed.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen. Really appreciate the opportunity to join you.
Absolutely. All right, Dr. Hall, what's your first question for Ed?
Well, sure, no problem. Well, Ed, you know, tell us a little bit about kind of like where you grew up and just a little bit about your early childhood life and those kind of things that got you into interested in sports and into baseball and also into football.
Sure. Yeah, I was born and raised over in South Jersey, actually born in Trenton, New Jersey, when I was about 4.5 years old. My mother and father moved me and my brother to a small farm town in South Jersey. You don't normally think of farm towns in Jersey. Everybody considers Jersey like to be city. But yeah, we moved to Browns Mills, New Jersey, and had the opportunity to grow up in a very small community. You know, when we first moved into our house in 1974, you know, the community was so new that my brother and I had the full run of the neighborhood. You know, a lot of houses weren't even built yet. So we were running through foundations, riding our bikes and things like that. And, you know, really a great area to grow up in, you know, through the 70s and 80s, you know, through my days in the high school. As far as sports, you know, it was like, I remember the first time my dad was driving us around. I was about 5 years old and we passed a little league field there in Browns Mills. And I got so excited, you know, I hadn't seen organized baseball before. And, you know, the first thing I said to my dad, I want to play baseball. And, you know, it's too late to join that season. But sure enough, the following year, you know, he got me involved in Little League. And that was my first taste of baseball. And that, you know, over the course of years, that grew into a love of mine. You know, I had a passion for baseball and I also played the other sports like, you know, kids do. You know, we used to run around the neighborhood getting our pickup football games together, going up to the local basketball courts to, you know, get some basketball in during the summer and different things like that. You know, I tried football when I was about 7 or 8 years old, organized football, and I did not like it. I didn't have that aggressive nature yet. So what happened was after like the first or second practice, I went home and told my mom that I didn't want to do that anymore. And she said, well, we don't quit things in this house, so you're going to have to finish this season, but afterwards we can figure out something else for you. What happened was I ended up playing baseball all the way through in the high school. I started playing soccer from about 9 years old till I was in a freshman in high school, and I played basketball as well all the way in. And then once I got to high school, things kind of took off for me in the form of being a well-known athlete in South Jersey. I had all kind of different honors and things like that, but that was the beginning of everything for me.
Playing two sports, especially at that level, how did you know that you were good enough to play professional sports in both sports? Did you have that idea that were you like, because again, we all know how difficult it is to be involved in professional sports, to be a pro athlete, but to be a pro athlete in both sports, did you know you had that talent to be able to play in the next level of both?
Well, when I was younger, everybody used to tell me about my talent, but I never, you know, my mom and dad raised both my brother and I to be humble and, you know, I kind of respect our gifts. And, you know, being an athlete was my gift. You know, a lot of, you know, I'm enamored with other things that others can do, like play instruments and, you know, and act and you know, doctors, different things, talents that I didn't have. I was fortunate to be an athlete. And like I said, from an early age, people were telling me how good I was, but, you know, I always felt like I had to prove it. It wasn't one of those things where I took anything for granted. So by the time I got into high school, I was being highly recruited across the country as a tight end. And, you know, and then I had all the scouts showing up toward my junior and senior year for baseball. You know, I knew it was a possibility. What ended up happening, I ended up signing my letter of intent after going back and forth, taking visits to schools for baseball and football, and, you know, everybody trying to tell me what to do, I decided to follow my dream, and I ended up signing my letter of intent in my senior year to go to the University of North Carolina on a full baseball scholarship. And I told them, you know, what I would do is I'd take a full baseball scholarship and I'd play football on the side, because everybody thought that'd be a waste of talent not to give football a shot. But I didn't want football to be the dictator of that. I didn't want to go to school on a football scholarship and then be told I had to give baseball up. So I went that route. But then what happened, the Chicago White Sox came along in the seventh round of the draft that year in 1987. They selected me and went back and forth and haggled with them, you know, over a little money and school and my contract and things like that. You know, as far as, you know, knowing I was going to be a professional athlete, I never knew it, but it sure was my dream. It's what I, you know, a lot of kids grow up and they, you know, they know early on they want to be this or they want to be that. I knew what I wanted to be. I didn't know it was going to happen. And then the way my career kind of unfolded, which I'm sure we'll get into, because obviously I went right out of high school and started playing professional baseball for 9 years. And then, you know, the journey took a turn. But like I said, it was a lot of hard work, sleepless nights, a lot of blood left on both fields when it was all said and done.
All right, Dr. Hall, your next question.
Wow, this is an incredible, incredible story. And, you know, we know it takes a lot of discipline and hard work to be successful in those sports. And literally, there's thousands of kids, hundreds of thousands of kids across the U.S. and the world who want to play those sports. And so, you know, what are some of those principles you would say, Ed, that these young people should have, you know, as they strive to reach those heights that you reached?
Well, one of them is the discipline. You know, I think it's an overused word sometimes, but I think it comes down to, if you want something, you have to, you know, kind of put yourself on that track and stay on that track. And a lot of times, you know, especially with young kids today, they get pulled in so many different directions. You know, they want to do this, they want to do that. And I'm all for experimenting and figuring out what you want to do. Once you decide on a path, you have to have that discipline to stay the course, and then also expect those bumpy days and those bad nights. You know, throughout my career, as I was trying to climb the minor league baseball ladder, man, you talk about some nights where I was questioning, you know, what did I get myself into, or what would have happened if I would have went different routes. But, you know, sometimes our biggest enemies are ourselves, because we talk ourselves out of, you know, success and chasing those dreams, you know. So for me, you know, even through everything, you know, it was the discipline to stay the course, the ability to sometime, you know if it's not good now, but I got to fight through this and just continue on. And then the one last thing I always tell people, you got to enjoy what the heck you're doing or what you're chasing. You know, I got to a point at the end of my baseball career, after 9 years, I was no longer enjoying it or having fun. And that's why I made the change and the pivot to try football out. But, you know, once I decided it wasn't something, that passion and that fire was gone, I didn't stick around just to do it because I was supposed to. And, you know, like I said, you got to love what you're doing. And because a lot of sacrifice comes with chasing those dreams. If you're not fully engaged in it, love it, dedicated to it, you know, you might as well go find something else to do, because you're wasting your time.
Now, when you talk about losing the passion for baseball, why? Why did you lose that passion?
Neil, I had been playing for almost 9 years, almost 10 years, and I got right to that point where I was in the middle of the steroid era. I played professional baseball all the way up to AAA from 87 to 95, which was my last season. And in the 94 season is when the strike happened for the big leaguers. You know, I finished my season playing with the Chicago Cubs that year, signed a contract with the Indians after going over and playing some winter ball in the Dominican Republic that winter, which was the winter of 94. And when I came back, the game itself was in chaos. You know, they obviously had first World Series missed since, you know, the days of World Wars, you know, that type of thing. And it was just a sad time for baseball. You know, I went to camp with the Indians honoring my AAA contract. And what happened was, that whole spring training, at the time, the manager, Mike Hargrove, every day was coming across from the big league camp where they had the, you call them scab or replacement players. you know, playing in place of the big leaguers. He was talking to me every day, trying to get me to come over. Ed, you know, I need you over here. You know, I want to give you a great look. This is, you know, this will be an opportunity for you. And, you know, once this all breaks, you know, this will be a feather in your cap. And I just kept telling him, Mike, I signed a AAA contract. I'm going to honor that. I'm not crossing any lines. And when the strike broke, you know, I started that season in AAA. And at one point, I was leading the American Association. I was in Buffalo with the Indians, leading the American Association in home runs average. I was hitting like 375 over the first month and change, you know, on my way thinking this is the year I'm going to get noticed. And when the strike broke, they brought all the 40-man roster players back. And, you know, it was a lot of chaos because a lot of guys had to be who had been promised things by big league, you know, Major League Baseball, you know, cross the line, come help us. We'll help you when it's all over. A lot of those guys got blacklisted. They were just exiled from the game. Meanwhile, I had done nothing wrong. But at the same time, I felt like I was punished. The Indians, for no apparent reason at all, you know, they toiled with me for a little while, left me up there in AAA. At one point, I sat on the bench for 14 days in a row, didn't pinch hit, didn't play in a doubleheader. I mean, I was literally just sitting there, and even guys on my team were trying to figure out, what is going on? Why are you not playing? I was like, I don't know. I can't tell you, you know. After the 15th or the 14th day, we get back from a road trip. They put me in the lineup. I have a good day, get called into the manager's office after the game, and they want to send me back to AA. And you're talking about breaking. I was like breaking a horse's spirits, man. After everything I'd done to be sent back down to AA, and I ended up going back down there. And after about a month or so, you talk about losing the passion for the game. Neil, that's when I decided, hey, it's been almost a decade I've been chasing this, and if this is my reward – and I'm now back on the bus tours riding. I was in, went from riding or flying planes around the country when I was in Buffalo. We're going to New Orleans, Oklahoma City, you know, different places. Now all of a sudden I'm in the Eastern League, 14-hour bus rides from Canton, Ohio to Portland, Maine and different, you know, and you're talking about, I just knew it was time to do something else. And, you know, like I said, I had some sleepless nights trying to figure out what was next. And, you know, football came into my mind, even though I hadn't played football for almost over a decade. But that was something that popped into my head. And I, as I say, the rest is history. So you'll ask me a question of how that all came to be. But that, to answer that question of what broke my spirit, that's what broke my spirit.
Oh, my gosh. And that's called politics. And people don't understand it. There's politics in everything in life. And there you go. Baseball, that's what happened. And you made the right decision for sure. All right, Dr. Hall, next question for Ed.
Oh, well, no problem. You know, just kind of transitioning over, you know, like I said, like 9 years. And just had to have the strength and willpower to transition over. And so actually ends up playing in the NFL and has an NFC championship, you know, with the Falcons in the – It's 1998. Now, tell us how that felt,
man,
to be on a championship team.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. You know, to make the transition, you know, and it wasn't easy. I finished that baseball season in 95. I talked to my brother, who was by then, he's 2 years younger than me, but he was going into his third year in the NFL with the New Orleans Saints after playing 4 years at Notre Dame under Lou Holtz. And I called him one night and asked him about this crazy idea I had about getting back into football after, like I said, a decade of not even playing the game, not in college or anything like that. And he encouraged me, and I took this shot. You know, I finished that baseball season. And the following that, the fall and winter of 1995, I actually came out here to Arizona, which is where I reside today. But I got in touch with some people, worked, started to get my body into football shape, thought I could get a couple workouts, somebody to take a look at me in the NFL, and that didn't work out. But the following spring, I ended up being presented to the World League at the time, which eventually turned into NFL Europe. But they heard about me, gave me one of the teams out of the eight teams, gave me a shot to come over there to their camp in Atlanta, you know, quick workout. And if you look good, we'll keep you. If not, you know, we'll let you go on your way. I ended up going there to that camp, which had already started. I was like a week and a half, almost 2 weeks late getting there. But beat out some guys that were actually NFL players, had played in the league, you know, beat some of them out, went over to Europe, played for the Birmingham or Frankfurt Galaxy that season. And by the time I got back, that season was a spring season. By the time I got back here in June, my agent was getting calls from the NFL. I went into my first camp. And as you mentioned, you know, I spent that first year on the practice squad in Washington. The next 2 years, I was on the active roster in Atlanta. And then on that 98 team, the Dirty Birds, man, we actually went all the way to the Super Bowl. You know, it was an unbelievable, magical ride. Ended up losing to the Broncos in that Super Bowl. But for me to just not that long ago be riding buses in minor league baseball and then all of a sudden be standing on the field. And I'll be honest with you, just being on the field in general, but, you know, because I remember days, it could have been a Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That felt like the Super Bowl for me, because to make that change and be where I was after all the toiling in the minor leagues. But then, like I said, you fast forward and to be coming out of a tunnel on a Super Bowl Sunday was unbelievable. And I still get chills just talking about it and thinking about that whole experience, you know, not just that Super Bowl, but the incredible ride, that 2 year ride with the Falcons, going from the first year I was there in 97, we started the season 1-7, finished 7-9, and that started the roll next year, 14-2, you know, NFC champions going to a Super Bowl. Unbelievable. And I tell you, man, you're talking about a lot of hard work that went into that and, you know, overcoming some what I call incredible odds. To be standing on that stage, like I said, still gives me chills just to talk about it today.
You know, you talk about that, Ed, and you talk about specifically enough the Super Bowl experience. What was your fondest memory of that week, the Super Bowl weeks, right? You know, the media week, and then also leading up to finally the Super Bowl. Do you have some favorite memories?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, even after we won the NFC Championship game up in Minnesota, 11-point dogs, you know, then going home and spending the week in Atlanta before we finally flew out to Miami, you know, it was just, I'd never felt like fandom like that and been on top of, you know, the sports world. And it was unbelievable. And then when we got down to Miami, everything was, you know, like everything from we get there and every one of us, every player had a rental car waiting in the parking lot for us. We had not only our big, huge suite at the hotel, but we had a secondary suite that we could have for our families. You know, the biggest thing for me, my mom and dad came down. My brother came out. He was with the San Francisco 49ers that year. We actually beat them to go to Minnesota to go to the Super Bowl. So we had our memories, you know, playing on the field against each other three times that year because we were in the same division. And then, you know, to have him down there, mom and dad, and I flew my agents out, got them tickets as well. And just, like I said, my biggest memory is the day before the game, our final walkthrough. We had to get together. We're out there on the field. First time we'd seen the field, we were practicing that week at the University of Miami's facility. First time we've seen the field, you know, our final walkthrough, and every blade of grass and every just spot of paint was just magnificent. And the field was pristine. And I remember we went and took our team picture, and then we had a little bit of time before we had to get out of there because the Broncos were coming in. And I remember like just going off to the side, and I was, you know, I was sitting, like kneeling on the field. And just the thought of, oh, my God, I'm playing in a Super Bowl tomorrow. It was the most amazing thing just to, you know, and then what happened is, you know, you're not paying attention. I'm actually looking at it right now. A photographer caught a picture of me with the Super Bowl 33 emblem in the background, just kind of kneeling and in my thought. And that was later put in a paper in my hometown. It was an AP picture. They shared it back there. And I still have that memory. I'm looking at it right now of myself just pondering that moment, how, you know, just amazing, you know. And you start having those thoughts of, man, maybe I'll even catch a pass tomorrow. Now, you know, I'll be in the end zone. You know, you start thinking like a little kid. You start thinking the night before the big game, what the possibilities could be. So, you know, it's just amazing. Like I said, even now, just the thought of it, it's just to have that experience. And it wasn't, you know, wasn't given to me. I had to go take it. But that experience and just being a part of that, and then still having some of my teammates that we all stay in touch and to be able to talk about that is amazing.
I hope Radio Row for me next year, wherever the Super Bowl is going to be next year. Maybe we'll see each other at Radio Row next year, because again,
it's in Arizona. Actually, it's here.
Oh, wow. That'll be.
Yeah. So I have my radio show. I've already planned. I'll be out there myself, so I definitely look forward to seeing you, Neil. We'll have to do something next year for
All right, Radio Row, Arizona. Here we go, Super Bowl. And maybe somehow the Steelers Well, Kenny Pickett can lead them on. That would be awesome. We'll see. We'll see. You know, I'm a Pitt fan as well, Ed.
Okay. There you go.
All right. Go ahead, Chris, for your next call, question for Ed.
I mean, it's just a fabulous story. I mean, like, he's overcome, like you said, incredible. And has transformed that into, you know, he, near to his heart is the motivational, inspirational speaking. And so, Ed, you know, talk a little bit about that. I mean, what message, you know, are you trying to get across to young people, and whether it's business executives or other leaders? You tell us, what's the message you want to get across when you're speaking to people?
Thank you, Chris. Yeah, I consider myself a little bit of a chameleon, because I have so many different type of stories that I like to share with my audiences. Well, you know, whether you're talking about overcoming the incredible odds or chasing your dream, you know, the fact that, you know, I had so many people earlier in my life tell me, you got to go play football, you know, you got to go play football. And I chose to chase my own dream, you know, and then not giving up on that dream, but at the same time, knowing when it was time to pivot. So, you know, those type of messages. I also talk to businesses about leadership and also about team building. One of my favorite programs that I put together, it revolves around team building and how, like, for instance, a sports team can resemble a business. And when I talk about that, you know, you think about any business, you got to have your CEO or ownership. You have to have your management. You've got to have your coach, and then your players. And then I like to break it down even from there. In one of my programs, I talk about how every business has got to have that franchise quarterback. You know, you might have three or four people in your organization that think they're the franchise quarterback, but you can only have one, and that one leader. And then you have your others, you know, like I break it down where you got your offensive linemen. Those sometimes can be your IT guys or the grunt guys. The only time you hear from them, like in the NFL, is when something goes wrong. If there's a flag, it's against the offensive lineman. That's the only time you're going to hear his name all through the day. And then, you know, you got your Swiss Army tight end who can do it all. They can do sales. They can sometimes step in and be an IT guy. So those are, you know, that's just a few of the things I love to talk about. As far as the young kids, I try to encourage them to, one, chase their dreams, but also enjoy life as much as they can. I think with all this internet and different things and a lot of, like, they have shocks to their systems. They grow up so fast and they don't enjoy the younger days of their lives. I look back at those days, like I mentioned earlier, my brother and myself running, you know, just wild through, you know, the neighborhood and having fun like little kids. And, you know, and sometimes, like I said, these kids, they grow up too fast. But, you know, I encourage them, like I said, to chase those dreams, but also enjoy life, respect their parents, you know, it's not a lot of cliche stuff, because I go deeper and into the stories. I use specific examples from my journey to match the audience I'm talking to, but I really enjoy, if you can't tell, I really enjoy it. And I enjoy sharing, which is odd because I'm pretty much an introvert when it comes to, you know, personality, yeah. But I, you know, between all this radio and podcasts and speaking, and, you know, it brings it out of me when I'm excited to talk about different things and get a specific message across to an audience.
You know, and it's about the whole thing of speaking in front of an audience, performing in front of an audience. Ed, you got the opportunity. I did as well. I was a former professional wrestler. So I one time did WWE, where I got to be in front of 15,000 fans at Omaha Civic Center against Crush and Savio Vega. And I got some licks in. You know, I'm a legitimate 6'10". It was like a tryout match for me. I've been in crowds of 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 8,000, and maybe 50 in performing and wrestling. And I've gotten to speak in front of 100, 200, 300, 400 people, either virtually or in person. How much of a rush is there to provide in speaking in front of an audience and versus playing in front of 60, 80,000, 100,000 people?
That's a good question, Chris. You know, the thing about speaking, and I'll talk about playing in front of those crowds, and you'll notice because you've done it before. It's especially when you're in a team environment, you're out there and you're trying to do your job. You try to focus it all out. So you're not necessarily looking, you're not focused on one person in the crowd. You hear the 70 plus either cheering for you or cheering against you. And I've been on both ends of that. And I remember going up to Minnesota for that NFC Championship game in 98. And it was, or, you know, 98 season. It was unbelievable. I mean, at one point, you know, they got that big Viking horn and we're getting ready to kick off and they do that Viking horn.
Yeah.
And, it's like, I actually couldn't even hear myself. I screamed at the top of my lungs and I couldn't hear myself over the noise. So it's funny. You get out there and, you know, you just focus that out. When you're speaking, I don't care how big the crowd is. It could be 50. I've spoken in front of, you know, 10, 15, 100, and like you said, thousands. When you're speaking, all eyes are on you. And it's like, it's an entirely different rush because the focus is on you. And now, you know, you're challenged to perform, not in a group, but, and you know, you as a wrestler, you had someone you were wrestling against, so you were performing, but it was exactly. Still singular.
I ended up having to get heat with the crowd and focus on many people in the crowd. But again, Ed, I'm a former college basketball player, so I played in front of 500 people, 700 people, maybe 1,000 people in the WPL finals. So I understand what you're saying. We're not focused. You're just looking at all the noise, not focusing on an individual person when you're speaking or when you're doing something else. And Chris, don't you agree? It's basically you really put your attention on an audience. And that's what I think, that's more of a rush.
Yeah, it can be, especially when you do it well. When you don't do it well, Neil, you know, because we've all had those bad days. And it's
I saw that in Clubhouse where I would have 1,000, you know, 500 people speak in front of 300, 400. And then one day it's like 6. So you feel it in that virtual world as well. Or, you know, it just depends on what guest you're on a podcast or how much of an audience. It's all fun. All right, Chris, next question for Ed.
Oh, with no problem, you know. And so I wanted to ask Ed a little bit about just transitioning from professional sports back into just like, I guess you would describe normal everyday life for the normal average American. Kind of what is that like, and kind of what does it take for these professional athletes to make that transition successfully?
Well, you know, that's a great question, Chris. And I remember when I was right around 2001, you know, it was time for me to hang the cleats up, and I didn't want to hang them up. It was just a situation where I was early 30s. You know, it's harder to find a job when, you know, they're looking for younger and cheaper in the NFL. And, you know, I finally got to a realization. My last year played in the XFL, actually, the original version of it in 2001. And after that, you know, the offers kind of went away. And it was one of those situations where, okay, I took a little bit of time off. And then I had to really figure out, okay, I'm 32, 33 years old. Where do I go from here? You know, what am I going to do? And fortunately for me, I had a background, you know, which was, I was blessed because my mother, especially, and my dad, it was all about education. It was never all about sports. It was all about being a better person. It wasn't about, you know, how many balls I could hit or catch or anything like that. So once I was done, I realized it took me a little time. You know, it took about a year, about 6 months to a year where, you know, I felt like I'd earned a little bit of rest, you know. Just going to the gym a little bit, keeping the body in shape, figuring out next moves and things like that. And one day, you know, things just happen sometime. One day a gentleman saw me in the gym and he recognized me from my day. I was still in Atlanta at the time and recognized me from being a Falcon and wanted to talk to me about getting into his business, which was financial planning. And I explained to him, hey, look, I've never done anything like that. But after talking to me, you know, he's like, look, your mind is what I'm looking for. You know, and your, you know, what you could bring to the table. So, you know, I took a chance at that. I ended up getting licensed in all aspects. You know, I didn't take an easy way out. I went and got my Series 6, 63 life and health annuities. I was fully invested in being a financial planner, which was a good start into the corporate world, gentlemen. But after a couple of years, I realized that's not what I necessarily wanted to do. But it was a good training episode for me because it got me away from sports and into the corporate world. And then over the course of the next bunch of years, you know, it was kind of figuring out, like, you know, early 2000s, eventually I settled on, you know, a few things in terms of my life. I started working in the IT world. I was a business development manager for a company, which I still do to this day. That's an industry I've still been in. But then, you know, with extra time on my hand, not totally dedicated to sports, I started looking at other aspects, which in 2005, I had been encouraged so many times, after people heard my story, the first thing they would always say, man, you need to write a book, you know? And I kept thinking, I don't have anything to say, you know? And eventually I heard it enough, gentlemen, and I went ahead and did it. My autobiography was, and which is something I personally wrote, was published in 2005. It's called Easy Does It, The Journey of a Lifetime. Since then, you know, I've been in radio for 11 years. I've just celebrated 5 years with my show, Easy Sports Talk, out here in Phoenix. Back in March, I do the podcast, the Believe in the Cardinals podcast. I guest host on other shows like yourself and others. I do ESPN spots. Then I do the travel and speak as well. So to answer your question, Chris, the transition was one that I think I was prepared for by my parents not making my entire life just about sports. You know, I knew there had to be a second chapter. Exactly. And there are a lot of, and you'll notice, Neil, especially, there are a lot of athletes, when they're done, they have absolutely no idea. What they're going to do or direction. And then some of them, they can't get away from the fact that they're no longer being cheered on the field, or they miss the crowd. And there's no rush for standing out on the field. Nothing I do in my business life is going to give me that rush of coming out of a tunnel on NFL Sunday. But if I take the same pride in what I'm doing, that's what it's all about.
Exactly.
I've learned that lesson, you know, like I said, over the course of time.
All right. So now we're going to jump to the podcast, Chris. And then, Chris, we're going to have a final question. I got about a bunch of questions on podcasting. Ed, it's my experience. Okay. You started out in radio and you had your radio show. What made you want to do a podcast and kind of look at and kind of compare the difference between radio and podcasting? Because if some of these athletes aren't able to really describe that, but it seems like your business acumen and understanding specific things, you really do see the differences between radio and podcasting. So I'm a dual thing. This is going to be on radio as well. I'm on syndicated radio and podcasting, and I have a television show. So I understand exactly the differences. But kind of tell me why you decided to do a podcast, first of all, and then tell me the difference between podcasting and radio.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I started doing the podcast because I was approached by, you know, Believe, and the, you know, what happens is you do different things like the radio and you know, I was doing other people's shows, and if you're good at it, then people recognize you. And I take that as a compliment that companies like Believe and some others have been adamant about, hey, we want you to be a part of what we do. For me, the difference in radio, because I started radio back in 2011 on my own little show called Easy Sports Talk originally, which is the name of this show as well. But it wasn't based on, you know, talking about specific teams or anything like that. It was an hour show, Saturday nights, little small local station here in Arizona. I was talking about stories from my career, situations, you know, different things like that. And then I did that for almost 2 years and then took a break and then got involved with the NBC Sports Radio here, doing some different shows, you know, guesting on them. And then my spot came open 5+ years ago. Excuse me. I took advantage of jumping on full time. For me, the difference in radio is it's a weekly kind of commitment where every Saturday from 10 to 12 out here, I've got to bring specific topics. You know, we follow the local teams and, you know, and the national stuff as well. But I've got to be up on everything local. I've got to deliver entertainment. I got to be up. You know, the difference for me with podcasts is, one, it's the scheduling of them. You can kind of do them according to what your schedule is. Because, you know, I do the Believe podcast with my partner, radio partner, and he's my podcast partner. We do them like when during the football season, we do them every week. But right now we do them on a every other week basis, depending on what's going on with the Cardinals. And they have been giving to us with all the Kyler Murray news and stuff like that. But for me, podcasts, I'm not going to say they're, I'm looking for the word. I would say you can be a little more ad living.
Exactly.
On the podcast.
And you're not controlled as much, for sure.
Exactly. Wow. They're less structured. So that's the perfect word to kind of describe them.
Exactly. Chris, go ahead and tell us, everybody, summarize Ed Smith. Chris, go ahead.
Wow. With no problem. I mean, again, his vast experiences are really hard to summarize in a couple of cents, but I think we can say Easy Does It. The journey of a lifetime. He's given some great points, you know, to young people and to people who are out there who need motivation, you know, take on those incredible odds, believe in yourself, choose your dreams, okay? Love what you do, okay? And so, wow, we've just had a great interview here with one of our standouts, one of our great Americans. And so, wow, we're so excited that you came on the show today. And thanks a lot.
Man, I can't appreciate you guys enough. And anything I can do to support you guys, let me know. I'll definitely let everybody know about this time on with you. But like I said, you guys are great, and I appreciate you having me on.
I appreciate it too, Ed. Best place we can go to listen, go to Bleed Podcast Network, and it's available in all different podcasts. And where can we check you out, Ed? Best place social media-wise?
Social media-wise, on Twitter and Instagram, at Ed Smith Speaks. And if you want a copy of the book, or if you want to just check out my website, it's edsmithspeaks.com. That'll tell you all about my story. There's a tab on there if you'd like to purchase the book. And what happens is the books come directly from me, and I sign every one of them individually when you get them from the site. So that'd be a great way if you want to learn more about me, edsmithspeaks.com, and at edsmithspeaks on all platforms.
All right. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate you guys.
All right. That was the Dr. Christopher Hall Show and sports category director Neil Haley's Podcast Magazine, guys. Take care.